This is Talking of Books with Isabel Abuhul, John McDonald, and the rest of the team.
In association with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
Only on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Welcome to Talking of Books. I'm Isabel Abuhul, and my co-host today is James Mullen.
Great to be here, Isabel.
Good morning. And before we get into our book, before we went on air, James, I was asking you about whichschooladvisor.com, which you founded how many years ago now?
It's coming up for 5 years we started it, with the idea of just helping parents choose schools. So we do reviews of schools, we go and speak to them, we publish guides, and altogether try to offer the best advice we can.
It's fantastic. It's absolutely fantastic because it's such a transient community living in the UAE, and if they've got children, the first thing they're going to be concerned about is finding the right school for their child.
Exactly. I mean, the great thing, I mean, what people underestimate about Dubai is the variety of choice that they've actually got here as far as schooling. I mean, it's got an incredible number of curricula. You've got 19 different curricula available here, and it's a very fast, as Dubai itself is, it's a very fast developing scene, and things are happening in education here that are not happening elsewhere in the world. So it's a great place to be, actually.
And you were saying also there's you've sort of moved into even the kindergarten and sort of the early primary years as well.
Exactly, yes, because that's a sort of a key area. I mean, what's interesting is that the care that people used to take in terms of choosing a school, and they used to be quite easy in terms of how they chose their nursery, but they're now applying the same sort of standards to the choice of early years and kindergartens, and they want to know exactly the qualifications of the teachers there, the teacher ratio, all of these key elements, and obviously they want to know the price too, which is a key thing. So, there's a lot for parents to absorb, and we try to make their lives as easy as possible.
Well, thank you for that, James, because it was a chance that you took this on because you saw there was a need, and it's sort of just growing and growing and providing something that is essential for so many parents looking for the right school for their child, because schools, you know, they're a bit like cars. You know, there is not one size fits all.
No, absolutely. And I mean, you know, Isabel, you know, having worked with the Lit Fest, having put education at the heart of the Lit Fest, how important it is to help parents out in these situations, because it really is. It's a very, very difficult time in their lives. They've got to make these big decisions. They've got to decide, you know, what's the right curriculum for my child? What should I be looking out for? How can I help them? And as I say, that's really what we try to do.
Well, thank you from everyone who I know uses your website and can absolutely rely on it. So it's whichschooladvisor.com.
Exactly, yeah. Go there today.
Yes, yeah. And check out all of the hard work that James and his team have put into this to help you make those important decisions earlier. But we're here on Talking of Books, and today our book champion is Prashiti. Welcome, Prashiti.
Good morning, Isabel.
And you are one of our wonderful Emirates Literature Foundation team back at our offices in Shindiga. And we're going through a pretty horrendous time, aren't we? That middle of a building site doesn't begin to describe the conditions.
Because the entire area is getting renovated, and we have landscaping work going around our offices, so it's those who are coming down to our offices, it's tricky for them to find where we are, because right now what they can see is just the construction wall.
Yes, and we're hidden behind that, and yes, they keep chopping our
internet connection,
which, you know, you realize that you cannot actually manage for very long without internet. So I think it will be repaired tomorrow. I mean, this has happened on several occasions, and it is really frustrating.
But just thank goodness that it is happening after the festival, and when at least right now people can work from home or at a different locations,
yes,
which wouldn't
true.
Have been the
that
case.
That is true. Had it been over the festival, we would have all jumped into the landscaping holes and buried ourselves, I think, because
have you all got hard hats down there then when you're walking around?
No. I mean, there was a bridge there one day, then the next day the bridge had gone and they'd sort of half filled it in with sand. There were big holes all over the place, but you know, our We're a hardy team. We are a hardy team.
You've been here
team.
Long enough, Isabel. You know what Dubai's about.
Yes, it is challenging at the moment. But because it's Ramadan, actually, we have shorter hours. And a lot of the work that we do, we can, at this time of year, as you said, proceed to do it off-site. But you chose a fascinating book to champion. So tell us a little bit about why you chose it, when you came across this book. And so on, Prashiti.
I chose the book, The Art of Deception. It is written by Kevin Mitnick. And in his sentences, if I say that, he says that he went to prison for his hacking and now people are hiring him to do the same thing in a legal way. So he was a very famous hacker, and I came across this book when I was doing my information technology laws and the cybersecurity.
Because you did a degree in law, didn't you?
Yes, I did my degree in law, and I was very much interested in technology and how these things work when I was doing my law. And cybersecurity was a prime coming up career that time when I was doing my course. So this book was my kind of extracurricular read, which I'm supposed to read. And while reading this, I realized that no matter how strong your firewalls are, how strong your IT system is, you cannot beat the social engineering angle, which is human mind, because human can always fall for something or the other. And that angle is very much what Kevin took an advantage of, and he started playing it as a prank, which later on landed him in jail.
Yeah. I mean, I'm interested in this term social engineering. I hadn't come across it before. Was a term that was invented by him, or is it a term that's been in currency for a while?
I'm not sure whether he invented the term, but it means that convincing somebody else to do a thing which they would not do otherwise. While reading this book, you will come across certain stories and you will think that a person giving out his password over the phone must be stupid. But if you read the entire scenario, and I think that the way you are convinced is matters.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the examples he gives is where you would wait for a snowstorm, for instance. So there's a snowstorm in the area, and he would then phone in and say, well, I've been stuck at home. I can't get access to my password because of the snowstorm. Can you just give me the password? And the number of people that would fall for a story like this, very, very simple story, but he's got legions of these examples, doesn't he, Prashiti?
Yes,
what other examples has he got then?
He has got another example where he calls in for getting the person's information about in a company where he was doing the corporate espionage, and how he convinced the other person is, first of all, he dials at the reception desk. The person says that he asks her if the person is in the office. She says, oh, no, he's on the leave. And then he says, okay. Then she asks him, can I pass it on to somebody else? So he calls that lady and says that, oh, I actually was looking for this guy. He promised me to do something before he goes on a leave. But he hadn't done it. So can you please help me? Otherwise, my job is in trouble. And being a human being, you always care if somebody convinces you by emotional thing, like, oh, my job is in trouble, or I'll be fired from my job, or there is something of that nature, and you give out the information.
Yeah, and sort of saying, you know, we would all say that, oh, you know, so-and-so's on holiday for a week. You wouldn't think that information could ever be used in that way, but he's obviously a genius at sort of acting on his feet, James.
Yeah, well, he's a confidence trickster. Mm-hmm. And what's the Americans have the term, the grifter, isn't it? Which they've had for quite a while. But he's a virtual grifter, if you like, in terms of how he works these deceptions. But what's interesting, I mean, I remember seeing a movie where somebody was a confidence trickster was talking about how he actually did his job. And he said it's not actually about taking confidence, it's about giving confidence. So if you give people your story, exactly as Prashiti was just describing, so you tell them a story about you and your situation, people will absorb that, and they'll generally want to help. I mean, another of the ones is where he goes to a door and he's laden with books, for instance. So you walk in and you think you need to get a security pass, but people go, oh, no, fine, well, he's laden with books, we'll just open the door for him. I mean, they seem very, very simple devices. But I think all of us can recognize that ourselves in that situation.
It's frightening. It is absolutely frightening, isn't it? I mean, it's, you sort of think, as you said, Prashiti, that we're never going to give out passwords. We're never going to do things like that. But it's a set of circumstances which may make many of us actually not be so careful. We're going to take a short break. We're talking about The Art of Deception by Kevin Mitnick. Stay tuned.
Book Champion, for all those books you might not know about, but should. From Shakespeare to Tolstoy, Stephen King to Danielle Steele, this is Talking of Books.
In association with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
On Dubai Eye, 103.8. Now, back to the team.
Welcome back to Talking of Books. I'm Isabel Abel-Hall. My co-host is... I was going to call you John McDonald.
No, please
James
not,
Mullen,
Isabel.
James Mullen, I'm so sorry. It's just a slightly programmed brain. And our book champion is Prashiti Talathi, and she's talking about The Art of Deception by Kevin Mitnick. While we were off air, you were asking, both of you were talking about how they eventually tracked him down and how he had all of the FBI's phone numbers. So explain to us how that happened and what actually he did, because they kept having problems, didn't they? They could not track him down.
FBI was trying to track him down, but for some or the other, for some reason he couldn't be tracked down, because what he did is he had all numbers of FBI officers on his radar, and if they are in his vicinity, he will get an alert that they are around. So he will be alerted that okay, something may happen. So at one point when he was sure that now they are looking for him, because he was coming from somewhere and going to his apartment, he could see FBI cars down there. But he just quietly, confidently walks in his apartment. And when he goes in the apartment, he realized that they are everywhere around that area, because, of course, he had them on radar. So he assumes that probably the next day they'll come and they'll look for him.
They'll raid his apartment.
They'll raid his apartment, yes. So what he does is he clears out the entire apartment, and he just has one box of donuts. He puts it in a fridge, and he writes on it, FBI donut. So if at all they come to his place to
have a donut.
Yeah, they'll have a donut for her.
Oh, they must have been so angry. They must have been so angry. So how James, did they, in the end, how did they get him?
Well, I'm not exactly sure how they hacked him down, how they actually got to him. I think, Prashiti, you were just saying that he made one fatal error. What was that again?
He made one error of opening the door and checking outside if they are still there in the building. And that's how they got the signal from his apartment bouncing back to them, and they found his apartment. Because apparently he had some other name on the letterbox, which is down the building. So they couldn't find an exact apartment where he's living. And when they entered in an apartment, in one of his interview, Kevin said that it took them at least 3 hours to get convinced that he is the Kevin Mitnick they're looking for.
Mm. So even when they actually were in his apartment and interviewing him, he still managed to run rings around them.
I mean, did he ever talk about why he actually did this? I mean, was it a game for him? Why was it? Because he was arrested when he was 17, I think. He spent almost half his adult life in jail. Has he explained why he did this?
It basically started as a prank, because one of his friends told him that, you know what, by doing a certain trick with a telephone, you can ring anywhere and anybody without paying a single penny. So that's how it started. He started playing that, and he got more and more interested with how the technology works, and he specifically focused on the human angle. He himself says that he's not a very good technical expert when he was doing all these pranks, but he could just find his way around and ask people to give the information which he's looking for.
It is incredible, isn't it? And then when he was jailed, he was put in solitary confinement for 8 months. Why?
He was put into a solitary confinement, which is only given to hardcore criminals and not somebody like a regular criminal. Mm. But police and FBI were afraid that he may just have something which will by just whistling, he can just shoot the nuclear missile.
That's it. Yeah. Apparently, what they were afraid of is if he got access to a payphone. This sounds like something out of science fiction. If you get access to the payphone, he could dial up NORAD, which is the North American Aerospace Defense Command. He could hack into it. He could whistle some tunes, and nuclear missiles would be launched as a result of this. So the people, the lawyers who are acting against him, actually convinced the judge that this was the case, and that he needed to be put into solitary confinement. So it shows you the level of fear that this guy actually engendered at that particular time.
And he was only allowed, was it three phone calls? Five numbers.
One of the number was his attorney, and rest four were his family members.
Yes. But he still managed to play tricks, didn't he? Yes. What did he do?
He started practicing a single thing every time when he dialed those five numbers, which is having his back at the phone, facing the security guy, and then just scratching his back with his one hand. And he practiced that gesture for the time that the security guy convinced that, okay, this is his regular style of talking. And then, because he was very much into this phone thing, he knew all the dial pad numbers. So even without looking at them, he could dial. Mm. And he knew that after the phone hung up and he dials another number, there is a time gap of 30 seconds when they can track him down. So he used to use those 30 seconds just to pass one line message to his friends or anybody else.
Mm, outside of the five. Oh, dear. But then they did find out, didn't they?
They did find out. And one fine day he sees from his cell that they are moving the telephone booth. So he thought that, oh, wow, they are going to fix that booth in my room. And what they actually do is they put the booth next to the wall. And every time he has to dial, they give him the receiver and the security guard will dial the number. So he had no access to the dialing number, other outside numbers.
Okay. So he is an absolutely fascinating guy, and he's written this book, The Art of Deception. And I believe, was there a film made of him, or it sort of inspired a film, shall we say?
Yes, it inspired a film, and I haven't yet watched it, but because by watching his interviews itself, you can understand how interesting the film will be. But unfortunately, I haven't yet watched it. But
yes.
His one sentence which stuck in my mind is, you cannot catch voice, and which he took an advantage of.
You can't catch a voice.
He never went in any organization in order to get the information. He always used a telephone.
Hmm.
So you cannot catch a voice. You need somebody behind that voice, that as a person, to catch and put him behind bars.
Interesting. Steve Wozniak does the foreword for this book, doesn't he? He's the partner with Steve Jobs at Apple. So he's one of the guys who set it up. And those pranks that you were talking about, if you read the Jobs book, the Walter Isaacson version of Jobs, he talks about similar sorts of pranks that Jobs and Wozniak used to pull as well. They were complete practical pranksters. And there was one instance I remember where Wozniak was thrown into jail. They were doing all sorts of, again, voice-based scams, which they were doing at the time, really just to entertain themselves. And Wozniak was put into the cell. And what he did was he took the wiring from the lighting and he connected it to the bars, so that when the guy came to open up, the policeman, he got an electric shock. So there must be something about these sort of IT geniuses, this pranksterism, really.
Yeah.
And you can see in certain ways it leads to, you know, great riches. It's that creativity, that imagination, if you like, you know, can be applied in a variety of ways, either for good or ill. Now, obviously, Kevin Mitnick has decided that he's seen enough of jail, and so he's joined the good side, if you like. What's he actually doing now, then?
He's actually now a security consultant, giving consultancy to various organizations, and he basically focuses on the human angle of how you should train your employees so that they will not give out the obvious-sounding information.
So it's he's looked at all of the ways that he got information and incorporated that into his training to say these are not facts that you... And it's like, I cannot bear cold callers. I absolutely, it brings out totally the worst in me. So if someone cold calls me, you know straight away they're cold calling you, and they'll say, we're phoning about the accident you had, or we're phoning about the damage to your computer. And obviously they, you know, a lot of people will say, sorry, what was that? But because they have incensed me, I will just say, I did not ask you to call. I'm going to report. In UK, you can actually report them because they're not allowed to cold call anymore. And they immediately cut the phone whenever you say that. But you think about how many, older people, young people who will be answering the phone, and they're caught by this sort of, we're going to get you money or something like that. There's always this sort of promise that it is, they're helping you.
I faced one of these incidences while I was working back in India. One of my HR manager, he just called me and said, Prachiti, because you did this cyber security course, you know what has happened? I received an email that I won a lottery.
Mm.
And they asked me to deposit certain amount in certain account. I said, yes, but that is not the right way.
Mm.
Because if you win a lottery, they will have all your details. And why did you, first of all, you need to purchase a ticket to win it.
Yes.
Have you purchased it? No. Then why did he deposited that amount which they asked him to do?
Oh, he didn't.
In the account. And you think that in your normal senses you will not do it.
No.
But when people see that, you win $1 million or $10 million, sometimes they deposit that tiny amount in hope that they'll get those, they'll get that money.
Yes. And cold calling, I think, should be outlawed anywhere because it is the most irritating thing. You can be busy doing something. You can be busy cooking, or you might be having, guests around, and you get this phone call. And it just it really, really incenses me whenever, because it's all sorts of things. You know, they're just trying to capture you in some way by the voice. He's so right about that. We've got a quiz question. That in a way relates to our champion's book, The Art of Deception. It is, which dystopian novel created the character Big Brother? Please send in the title of the dystopian novel that created the character Big Brother to 4001, and please put your name on that text. And the lucky winner at the end of the show will be contacted, and they will get one of the signed copies from this year's Emirates Airline Festival of Literature. Do stay tuned. We'll be back with more Talking of Books after this.
Book Champion, for all those books you might not know about, but should. From Shakespeare to Tolstoy, Stephen King to Danielle Steele, this is Talking of Books.
In association with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
On Dubai Eye 103.8. Now, back to the team.
Welcome back to Talking of Books, and thank you all. We're getting loads of answers, most of them right, not all of them right. So the question again for our listeners, the quiz question is, which dystopian novel created the character Big Brother? Because this novel, for those of you that have read it or know about it, is very much about how you can brainwash, how you can use sort of, I suppose, very clever ways of spin and PR to impact on the population. Interestingly, one of our listeners has said, I'm not able to verify this, but I hope it is the case, that it is illegal to cold call in Dubai, 50,000 fine for financials and 100,000 fine for real estate. So glad to hear that. So next time I get a cold call from either of those types of businesses, I will be able to let them know that.
Yeah, alert them to the financial implications of it all.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Yeah. Well, it is so, it's so irritating, and you do worry about people who are vulnerable. Not everyone is going to sort of be, say, robust enough to sort of just actually refute it and cut the connection.
Mm. No, I agree. And if somebody's now, because of the internet, whatever you do online, a history is stored somewhere or the other.
Yes.
So sometimes you receive an email, like when I was doing, I'm going back to my law days because this is where I read this book. So you receive an email saying that you have been offered a job at a higher position somewhere in Nigeria, and this is your job offer letter. And you have to sign it, send it back with X amount of money. and that amount is kind of a security deposit, which you will get back when you go there. And
yeah,
amount of people thinking that, oh, this can be true, but they don't even first think that to get a job offer, you need to apply or
exactly.
you need to give an interview.
Exactly.
But this kind of scams, and even if they get like, say, $1,000 or say, even for that matter, $100, they'll get enough amount of money because...
Yes, if the vulnerable people will answer. But we've got a short clip of our author, this week's author of the Book Champion's Choice, The Art of Deception. Let's hear directly from the maestro, the maverick genius of hacking, Kevin Michnik.
So I'm going to tell you about an attack from years ago, back in my black hat hacking days, not because I'm proud of it, but because I think it illustrates an important vulnerability. So in 1993, I was working in Denver, Colorado for a law firm called Home Roberts & Owen, and at the time I wasn't working under Kevin Michnik. I was working under the name of Eric Weiss. Why not Kevin Michnik? Because certain federal authorities wanted to talk to me, and I didn't want to have a conversation with them. In fact, I didn't want them to know where I was. And the reason I chose the name Eric Weiss is because that's the real name of Harry Houdini, my favorite magician. I thought I had a sense of humor, but I learned later the FBI did not. None at all. So my colleague handed me this brochure for the MicroTac Ultralight, and which is this device. It's like the flip phone of the 1990s. It's like the iPhone of today. People love this phone. And as a hacker, I wanted to understand how it worked. I wanted to know the protocols, how cellular phone technology worked, because I was passionate with telephony for my phone freaking years. So I made a very stupid and regrettable decision to go after the source code of Motorola's MicroTac. So one early afternoon, I left the law office. I got down to the bottom floor of the cash register building in Denver, and I called directory assistance for toll-free numbers. I simply asked for Motorola. Got the number to a Motorola, talked to a receptionist. I said, hi, I'm looking for the project manager of the MicroTac, Ultralight. And the nice receptionist said, all our cellular phone developments handled out of Schaumburg, Illinois. Would you like that number? Certainly. She gave me the number. I called Schaumburg, got a different receptionist. I said, hey, I'm looking for the project manager of the MicroTac Ultralight. And I was transferred around 2, 3, 5. By the 8th call, I'm talking to the vice president of all of Motorola Mobility. And I said, hey, I'm looking for the project manager of the MicroTac Ultralight. This is Rick over in Arlington Heights, because during my previous calls, one person asked me if I'm from Arlington Heights. So I just included it to build trust and credibility. And he said, yes, that's Pam. She works for me. Would you like her extension? I said, please, give me the extension. He goes, can I help you? I go, no, that's okay. Because I don't want to ask a VP what I wanted to ask Pam. So I call Pam, and I didn't get her. I got her outgoing greeting that she left on her voicemail, and she told callers that she just left on a 2-week vacation, the date she's returning, and if you need any help whatsoever, please call Alicia on extension, blah, blah, blah. Who's my next call to? And this is by the time I'm walking in a snowstorm in downtown Denver. My apartment's 15 minutes away. And what I'm literally doing is I'm pressing the phone so hard to my ear so you can't hear traffic noise. Because I'm never expecting this to work. It's all extemporaneous. No plan, no reconnaissance. I just figured, hey, it might be a cool thing to do on the walk home, right?
Wow. Well, what a chancer.
Yes. Exactly.
What a chancer. Yeah. But fascinating to see really into the mind of how this was just, he was filling his time walking in a snowstorm from his proper job going home, and he started doing things like this.
And it also requires a presence of mind where you use the information which you received from various people whom you talk to and just use that in your conversation when you're talking to the next person, which kind of builds a confidence. If tomorrow somebody calls in an organization and gives you a couple of big names or top management names from your organization, maybe people will fall for it.
Mm. And I like the way he provided enough detail, but not too much detail, because people are aware of that you need to paint that picture. So I'm coming from Arlington Heights or whatever it was. It just it paints the picture, tells the story a little bit, so you can picture that person. So yeah, I mean, obviously very, very talented confidence trickster. But what did you take away from the book then, Prashidi? What do you think you learned from it?
The main takeaway is you cannot beat the human angle which is there for the security. I have seen while working for this cyber security, I worked along with the police department in Pune for one of the cases. I have seen people literally write down their passwords of email account or their office computers on the laptop or the computer itself so that they'll not forget it, which is like, it's an open invitation that you keep the locker of a bank open and say that people come and loot it. It's just like that, leaving your passwords unattended. Mm. Second thing is how you put your passwords. Usually what people do is, in order not to forget the password, they use either the name, their family member's name, their date of birth or anything, any other word. But what Kevin says is never use a word which can be found in a dictionary as a password.
Mm. Mm.
Because it can be hacked. And then make sure that your password has got some special characters, lowercase, uppercase. It's a combination. And
And change it regularly.
Change it regularly.
The problem is that we're all lazy. Let's be quite honest. We're all lazy. So we use, you know, maiden names, dates of birth, dates of, or we use pet names or all of the sort of things that actually, and we tend to have one password because, hey, it's easy. But if we want to protect our data, then absolutely what you said. And if you want, if you've got a phone and you want to, if you go into passwords, it will give you one of those random passwords that you can use. And you know, banking will ask you to change your password very frequently and things like that, just to ensure that no one else has. And then you have the double security whereby you have to then, they will send you a message we put in. So, I mean, those are things that will help, but you've still got the human element.
Yes, and nowadays, because we have different accounts, we tend to use same password for all the accounts, yes. Which is, again, the mistake which we are doing. Because if the hacker gets access to your one password, he can easily try all your other accounts.
Mm.
And we have seen cases coming up that your password is hacked and somebody is using your Facebook account or somebody is using the Twitter account. And your identity is at jeopardy.
It's stolen, exactly, yes. So, I mean, we do have to be really careful and perhaps reconsider what we're storing where. But someone told me a scary story, and I can't remember where it was. I think it was when I was away briefly in UK, that they'd been discussing, a husband and wife had been discussing where they were going on holiday. You know, shall we go to, say, Croatia? And when she went back into her phone 3 minutes later, there was a holidays in Croatia thing. Now,
nowadays that happens if you pay attention to what kind of paid advertisements appear on your Google. Whatever you search for, the next search comes along with that.
Yes.
Mm. So
yes.
It's.
But that is okay. But not if you actually are just talking, and that the phones now have that ability to pick up.
Well, yes, they're broadcast devices. So and a lot of people now, Mark Zuckerberg, for instance, puts a bit of tape over his phone, doesn't he? Yeah, if you go to Germany as well, in particular, you'll see a lot of people will.
If they have guests, they put all the mobile phones, they collect them at the beginning of dinner and put them in the freezer.
Yeah,
I don't know whether that actually destroys the phones. Goodness only knows.
Yeah, but it's very common now to see people put tape over the camera, and to disable the microphone.
Mm.
To try to disable the microphone on it.
Yes,
but yeah, I mean you've got to be aware that. It is effectively a broadcast device.
Yes, and even if you're not on it. I think that's what's the dangerous thing, that actually you'll be sitting there thinking about, you know, or chatting with someone completely privately, but then that is somehow or other picked up by a mobile device and marketeers are getting at it. And you have all this predictive type of, so if you want to market someone, they know your address And then they will market it to people living in that same, they can sort of access people living near you because they think, well, maybe they will be interested in this device or, you know, or this new gadget.
Yeah, but I think, I mean, as Prashidia said with this book, it's the human element. I mean, I've got a lot of friends who are journalists and they get a lot of information simply by asking people questions. And do not underestimate, one friend of mine who's particularly talented at this, I saw him at a party in Dubai, walking around this party, and within the course of an hour, I said, have you picked up any stories? And he said, yeah, three. And I said, well, so these people just spoke to you? He said, yeah. He said, people will talk to you about themselves. So they didn't ask me who I am, they didn't ask me where I was from. So I actually have three really good stories that I can pursue. As a result of this, so
it's kind of like when you are conducting a cross examination. Don't ask direct questions which will alert the person, but hide your questions in such a way that the person will lead you to the answer what you are looking for. But actually, the information giver will not have an idea that what your ultimate aim is.
Yeah, you've actually you've got a roadmap.
Yes.
So you have a roadmap where you're trying to take them into certain directions. Yeah, I mean it's barristers and advocates are trained that way.
All famous presenters, interviewers, David Frost comes to mind, and Nixon. We're going to take a short break. We'll remember how Richard Nixon revealed all to David Frost on that interview. Stay tuned to Talking Books.
Book Champion, for all those books you might not know about, but should. From Agatha Christie to Jeffrey Archer, we've got it covered. Talking of Books.
In association with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
On Dubai Eye 103.8. Now, back to the team.
Welcome back to Talking of Books. And while we're off air, we're having a bit of a political chat about what's going on in the world of politics, but we won't discuss that now. We're talking about our book champion's choice. Prashiti has chosen The Art of Deception by Kevin Mitnick. And really, what a dangerous place the world is in terms of the ability of human beings and machines to gather information about us. You know, many people live their lives out in the public eye, on Facebook, on Twitter, wherever you look. And as you said, Prashiti, it never goes away.
You can always track it. I'll say that just try putting your name in Google and just Google yourself, and you will be amazed with the results which come up.
Yeah, which is quite frightening, isn't it, really, that there is going to be this tracker of you and everything you've said. And I think during this actually general election, the UK general election, that has been something that they've picked up what Theresa May said maybe 4 years ago, you know, or when they were going into, you know, she was for Remain and so on. And they're sort of playing past known. And the same, really, with Donald Trump. They were forever finding things that he'd said over the years. You can't escape it, can you?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of the things that young people I don't think are as cognizant of as they need to be is the amount of information that they're actually putting out there on social media, which is there forever. I mean, I remember speaking to my daughter once about Snapchat, and she said, well, Snapchat, you know, it disappears in 7 seconds. I said, put it like this, that the company at the time was valued at about $8 billion. I said, so all of their business disappears every 7 seconds and they're valued at $8 billion. They obviously have something that's worthwhile. And that something they've got is your data. They've actually got that data. And I think it's difficult because I think in these times, young people in particular, the issue of privacy and keeping your data to yourself is like an old-fashioned idea. Because when I start talking about this, about privacy, they very much look at me like I'm an old man, you know. What is this? You don't get it, Dad. You don't get this concept that we share everything now. But the danger is, how is it ultimately going to be used? We know as a matter of fact now, potential employers will do social media searches on candidates. So they will unearth all of that information. And there is a very rich business to be had in wiping your social media profile away. So there are actually consultancies that will do that. But they'll charge you a lot of money to do that as well.
Well, do you remember John Ronson's
John, exactly.
book, So You've Been Publicly Shamed, and how one of his case studies, this unfortunate person who was flying from America via Heathrow to put a tweet that got her job lost, etc., etc. And in the end, she had to employ these social media consultants to create a new persona for her, not only to get rid of her old one, but the major way of doing it was creating a new one.
Okay, so, did she have to change her name then? Or
she didn't change her name, but they managed to sort of get her involved in good works. And so when you went on and searched her, the previous history, and I don't know how difficult it is actually to wipe it ever, to wipe it completely.
I believe it's everything's possible with money.
Yeah,
so if you throw enough money at it, it can be done. But the fact that it is so expensive to employ these people indicates really how difficult it is to do this. But in terms of this book, then, Prashiti, I mean, you've been championing it. What would you say are the sort of the takeaways for the rest of us? I mean, you talked about what you got out of it. What do you think we should learn from this?
First of all, always take care when you are giving information online that if it is required for your, for example, your credit card details, just be careful on which site you are putting. Is the site has got a proper security certificate? Because at the bottom of the page, if you notice, they have the certificate. And beneath that, in tiny, tiny alphabets, they mention the year till it is valid. Just pay attention to that, because sometimes their security certificate is expired and you just see that, oh, okay, it is secured, but you don't see the year beneath it. Just pay attention to it. And as well as they say that be careful about what your friends and family putting about you on the social media, which I understand that it is beyond sometimes your control when if you are a public figure, but still you have to be careful about what you say. And anything you say in public is going to be there on the social media. And Isabel just discussed about how you can find four-year-old records and people can land in trouble. You never know when your ghost from your past start hounding you.
And also the way that now with social media, how anyone in the world can actually bully, you know, cyberbullying is another thing. So there's been so many instances of very cruel cyberbullying by teenagers to other teenagers, or from other people to, you know, even public figures, where they have put something that is either misjudged or said in a moment. And we had that wonderful, what was it, Covfefe, the word from Donald Trump, which was trending the next day. What was it? Of course it was an error.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
coverage.
Just, yeah.
That's what it was.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. But you know, those kind of things, if we go back 5 years, would never have happened.
And,
never have happened.
Also, the other most important thing is if anybody is asking you to do something based on a very emotional story, just be aware about it. I know as a human being, we automatically tend to respond to an emotional story, but sometimes just have your radars on and think that, should I trust or should I not trust? Mm. There is a subtle difference between it, but we'll have to unfortunately judge it for our own safety.
Mm. So it's a very valuable book. And I think the other one I would recommend is John Ronson. He was here at this year's 2017 Emirates Airline Festival of Literature, So You've Been Publicly Shamed, where he investigates several cases of where nowadays in the world it is so easy to be vilified and attacked by large numbers of people. And we do have to really take a lesson from that and think twice before you post anything, whether it's Facebook or Twitter or any of the other channels. Do you really need to do that? Because you may live to regret it, as quite a few people have learned. It's been a pleasure having you on Talking of
My
Books
pleasure.
Again, Prashiti, and as our book champion, and for sort of selecting a book which, to be honest, I hadn't heard of it. James, had you?
I had heard of him, but I hadn't. I didn't know about the book. But it was fascinating finding out about this. There were just so many cracking stories, I think, as we've unearthed over the last hour.
Yeah, he's got a real sense of wicked sense of humour, and the things that he did, and with the confidence, you know, you called him a confidence trickster. To be a trickster, you've got to have that confidence, absolutely. We are going to take a short break for the news, and then we'll be back with our young reviewer, Jodie Hamilton, the daughter of the author, Rachel Hamilton. So do stay tuned to Talking of Books. We'll be back with more after this.
Book Champion, for all those books you might not know about, but should.